Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we have Nick Germain, who's a content creator and private investor at miningbookguy.com. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Karema. It's nice to speak to you again.
Let's begin by talking about your interest in alternative investments and how you started within the mining and resource space. I understand you started a tech gaming company, sold it, and then started looking for new investment ideas. So give us a brief overview on how you began researching resource companies.
Oh, sure. Just to quickly go back to my Facebook gaming days, I was a co-founder of a company back around 2008 and involved in that until 2011. Where I was more the business guy and my friend was a brilliant programmer and game designer. And that company was sold out in 2017. So it was very successful, but I actually sold out to my founders around 2011, which is very important because I kind of went down that precious metals rabbit hole. I started getting worried about the world economy, very interested in gold and silver. And like many other people, that was a gateway, unfortunately, at just about the wrong, you know, worst time during the last peak. Now, by 2012, 2013, 2014, I went further down the rabbit hole of finding the mining stocks. But I think the real light bulb, and I felt lucky, was that I didn't really look into the tiny juniors, especially the thousands of juniors listed in Canada or Australia, till about 2014. So it was this process where I was an entrepreneur and was possibly going to start a new company and decided, you know what, I'm going to take my money and treat this private investing, speculating as my new business. And that really got going in 2014.
You're a younger person within the mining industry, Nick, and it'd be interesting to know from your perspective how the industry will find the next Ross Beaty or Rick Rule. Why is there a general lack of interest in younger people looking at mining and the speculative nature that can occur during bull markets? For example, is the recent rise of other sectors like crypto and the speculative gains that have been made in that market in part to blame? And if we are back in a bull market for the precious metals, perhaps this will now change?
Those are great questions, Karem. I think I have two parts to answer that. Now, the first part, I think you hit the nail on the head with distractions in other hot industries like the cryptocurrencies or, you know, the weed stocks. Now, that is actually starting to deflate. I think it's pretty clear to a degree. But there was so much hot money to be made and they were so relatable to younger people that it makes sense to me that a lot of people went in that direction. Maybe even their first investments or speculations were there rather than the mining space. Now, I was thinking a little harder about some recent things that I've become aware of, and a really good example is esports. I saw some fascinating documentaries, and this is really important where I'm in my mid-30s, and I feel out of the loop in the esports world because when I was doing gaming company stuff back in, you know, 2008, 2009, that barely existed. And that is a huge – that was really fascinating, but it's so much easier to grab the attention of younger people. I mean, you can play games and make money from it, and you can be in the audience. So there is a bit of an uphill battle there. But as a second part of the question, and I'll tie this all together – I think it's very important to realize there are a lot of CEOs, you know, hardworking CEOs in the junior space in their 40s who don't at all have, you know, the Ross Beaty or Rick Rule recognition yet. And they've been doing this quite a bit. So we do have these emerging CEOs. And I think that they're actually at an advantage because there are so few newer people coming in. So I'm invested in some of those companies, and I think we will have some new names come out. But as a bigger picture thing, I think we're a really big discovery combined with this gold, precious gold or, you know, precious metals bull. That's going to really get things going, a legitimate discovery, because I have seen younger people get excited by some of the hype on some discoveries or some things that maybe haven't worked out yet. We haven't had the legitimate, you know, something where it maybe gets bought out for billions of dollars, something like the Robert Friedland Diamond Fields in the 90s. So there was a lot of parts to that answer, but I think all these things are starting to come together And it's it would be really possible that within a year or two, a whole bunch of new people enter the sector.
Yeah, some great insights there. Okay, that leads me into my next question about how you actually look for value and the potential for a discovery, Nick. Within your research, I know one of the aspects you like to focus on is jurisdictions and finding assets in countries that are perhaps less well known. With this, of course, comes potential political risk and in some cases, governments seizing assets or control of mining companies themselves. So why do you focus most of your attention in less well known areas within the world? And I assume part of the answer is the greater the risk, the greater the reward, and the reward can be outsized if everything goes to plan.
Yes, well, you definitely got into the heart of what I really find exciting in the space. I always like to start talking about perception versus reality, and I wanted to find a niche for myself where I felt I had an edge. This isn't going to be true for everybody, but because I came in as an outsider and I know I can get help on geological information, I'm never going to be near the top on that. I'm surprised, but I actually feel like, over time I become more of an expert on many of these emerging new jurisdictions. And, a particular general region would be Africa. And you start to look at the individual countries and you realize that many of these countries go through these up and down cycles, just like a stock. So if you can find the few new companies in an emerging country or jurisdiction, and they get some of the best ground, and you actually realize that a lot of the best gold or whatever commodity is really easier to find because no one's been in that country or done much work over the last 10 or 20 years for a variety of reasons, could be civil wars or could be, coup d'etat, things like that. You can do really, really well. You get that extra bonus of the country moving up, of the discovery moving up, and you even have that romantic side, this new country's happening. And we've seen that in the past. BRIEX was a fraud, but that was a big part of it being so far away in this, kind of sexy area like Indiana Jones type thing. That was a huge part of the 90s. And then the 2000s, Fruta del Norte in Ecuador. And actually Ecuador still has some interesting things going on. But, we've seen that happen in the past. And there are so many newer countries to look at. And I realized so few other people are, and I think you get a huge bonus, and you can buy these companies extra cheap by trying to be early.
Many analysts are now starting to pay a lot more attention to gold and silver, but it'd be interesting to get your take on the copper market, Nick. I know you've done some research on this and have been looking for undervalued juniors in this space. So is this a market that investors should pay attention to now, despite the recent weakness within the copper price?
Well, copper is something I follow just like gold. I try to get pretty deep into it. But in both cases, I look more at the supply side. And with copper, there's the most important thing on the supply side that I think is still not widely recognized by just the typical investor is that there's a much, much larger gap between a tier one, really large deposit in the copper space versus a tier two type discovery or deposit. There's a bigger gap there than in the typical gold space. Now, granted, many copper deposits are copper gold porphyries, but because of that gap and because the copper market, mostly just because of the need, the craving of these large base metals type companies for new discoveries because there have been so few, there is going to be possibly a much larger immediate mania for the next copper discovery. But because the copper market's moving down, and I don't want to say I'm an expert on macro, where the gold price or the copper price is going, I don't think there's any rush to look into copper companies right now in general. But I am always have my eye on small copper explorers, and there are very few of them, but it's very possible that the next copper explorer that makes the really big discovery could be the biggest winner of all. And perhaps even better, if the copper price stays low, you might be able to buy a copper discovery for a cheaper price after that discovery because people haven't picked up on it yet in the investor space, the regular investor space, but the big companies will undoubtedly want to buy it if it turns into a tier one deposit. So there's it's a slightly complex, but in short, looking at small copper explorers is very enticing right now. And I think it possibly even more interesting in a low copper price environment.
We both know that gold and silver have been moving recently, and to the expectation of many people outside the industry, this is a surprise. So what are your thoughts behind the current moves in gold and silver? Have we moved too quickly in your view regarding the price action? And what do you expect the potential will be for the rest of the year, Nick?
Well, you know, on gold and silver price, I think it's exciting for gold and silver to be, you know, moving up. And it's, to me, the most important point is that while we just discussed gold and copper, or we're discussing both of those, I am fully focused on precious metals right now. I think that there's going to be opportunities across the resource spectrum, but I think this bull is really getting started, you might miss out on something in a different part of the resource sector, but the best risk rewards are going to be in the gold and silver space. Now, with that said, and I think this goes back to what I specialize in, you can make a lot of money in these more optionality plays, you know, advanced deposits that have inherent leverage to the gold price, where gold price goes to, you know, it's gone to 1500, goes to 1800, goes through 2000, and there's the multiplier effect. But with exploration stories, it makes sense that if a discovery is made and the gold price is going up, you get the icing on the cake comes from that gold price going up. But if that discovery is made and it's a high margin deposit, if by chance the gold price goes down, it's still going to go up. And I don't think that's expressed often enough. So from a risk reward perspective, I actually think looking at the smaller explorers will give you the largest multiplier in a rising gold price environment. Now, of course, it's a little bit of a crapshoot before the discovery, but you can often buy them just after the discovery. But importantly, in a lower gold price environment, you have much less risk. So I think it's worth, you know, sticking with that as a little bit of a different type of message from probably a lot of other podcasts, where sticking with explorers in a rising environment is great, but it can still hold up quite well in case you're wrong.
Let's move on and talk about a few books that have shaped your investment analysis so far, Nick. I know you've read many out-of-print books from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that have focused on mining. So are there any highlights you can share with us? Are there a couple that have made a big impact on you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Karem, because there is a series of books, but it's not exactly a series. They all kind of have the title The World of Gold. And it's by Timothy Green, but interestingly, he wrote the first book in the late 60s, right when that gold bull was getting on from the 60s through the late 70s, and he kept writing updated versions all the way up until the 90s. And I have multiple books. So the most important thing is to know that the author's name is Timothy Green, and the general title is The World of Gold. But I really need to emphasize that there's a lot of overlap in each of the books. And if I was going to pick a best one, it would be the one specifically called The New World of Gold, which was written, I believe, in 1981 or 1982. And this is the best gold book I've ever read that I don't think has ever been mentioned on a podcast before. And it covers the global spectrum of what's was going on in the gold space in both mining and also talking about, you know, paper gold versus physical gold at that time, but also the transition of South Africa being the dominant country in the gold space, really like something like 70% of gold production was there, which many younger people have no idea about, and that completely transitioned, starting in the early 80s. The Hemlo discovery in Canada was mentioned in this book. It was just, you know, very timely, and so. You could buy any book in that series. If you look up Timothy Green and The World of Gold, you'll find a bunch of books. but I just would say The New World of Gold, for an out-of-print book from the early 80s, you get a sense of the excitement. It's easy enough to read for the layman, you know, for someone like myself, but it's also very educational for people in industry. And I think many people in industry have not read that book because it rarely gets mentioned. So that's my top pick.
Fantastic. Okay, as we begin to wrap up, Nick, is there anything else you wish to share with us today? I understand you'll be attending the Beaver Creek conference that's coming up soon. And so how can viewers reach out to you? I know you have a lot of content on your YouTube channel, which goes through a lot of your research.
Yeah, well, a couple of things there. I definitely want to immediately say that I'm attending the Beaver Creek conference in less than 2 weeks. And, you know, for people who haven't attended that in the past, it's my favorite conference, especially not just for one-on-one meetings with companies, but I'm able to rub shoulders with, you know, small fund managers. And I manage my own money, but, you know, other people managing money for other people who are very professional. And for the serious retail investor type like myself, I couldn't think of a better place to go. I have some friends going for the first time this year. And, you know, that's something that more people should be aware of. And you can follow along the webcasts of all the companies on their website. So something that maybe there'll be a lot of deal making this year. And I think that's worth pointing out. I also just wanted to mention, in terms of, you know, regions in Africa, specifically, Namibia and Botswana are the best examples I have of that perception and reality gap. And I think things are really changing right now. I own a company in Namibia that I won't name, but that's doing some interesting things here. And there's another company I own that is a prospect generator that is able to, you know, go into these new countries, but limit that risk because they're in multiple countries. And if one of them, you know, kind of moves down, you know, the other ones might hold up, and, you know, diversifying that risk. So I thought those were just some other things, you know, worth generally mentioning that I'm really into. And finally, you can hear more about the specifics of those types of companies, whether you go to my YouTube site, but most importantly, just going to my website, miningbookguy.com, you can sign up for my free email list. I actually have my very first site visit report that took place in Africa earlier this year. I think it would be very constructive. I will be doing future site visits, I hope, but also have stock picks and definitely more book ideas, especially some exclusive ones. And, you know, no cost to you, just a couple emails at most per month. And yeah, I think that covers all the things I wanted to say.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you for your time today, Nick. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you back again very soon.
Great. It was very enjoyable. Thanks, Karim.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?